Amen. Turn with me to 1 Kings 17. I want to share with you this morning about a story of faithfulness. I think it's page 275 in the Pew Bible. Again, me and numbers, it's kind of a crapshoot. But 275 in your Pew Bible, in this story in 1 Kings chapter 17, Elijah, it's kind of amazing, and I'll kind of put some of the pieces together for you. This morning in the first service, God took us on a journey through his word, and he just kept pouring it over me, and I just kept taking us, and we were in James, and we read, I think Pastor Tony alluded to the story in 1 Samuel of Hannah and her desperate prayer for God. You know, she was desperately praying for God and for God to really kind of rescue her in her brokenness. And then the call that she actually talked about God's faithfulness, he provided a son for her, and then she gave it back. She did what she said she would do. She gave it back after 3 years. She brought back to Eli and said, "Do you remember me? I was the woman you thought was drunk when I was praying, because I was praying so bitterly and with great anguish. You thought I was drunk, and then realized that, no, I was crying out to God. You know, do you remember what I said at that time? I said that if you do this, Lord, I'm going to give this child back to you." And what we know, because we have the rest of the story, is that Samuel, who is Hannah's son to a barren woman, by the way, would be the turning point for the entire tribe of Israel. The turning point for the entire tribe of Israel was this boy named Samuel, who was born to a woman who cried out to God. Come on. Come on, folks. If that doesn't light your fire, your wood's wet. I mean, that's good news. That sometimes we just need to cry out. Sometimes we just need to bow in his presence. We just need to humble ourselves. You know? So here we are in 1 Kings chapter 17. And starting in verse 8, "Then the Lord said to Elijah, 'Go and live in the village of Zarephath, near the city of Sidon. I have instructed a widow there to feed you.'" Really? Really? Elijah, right? He's running. He's trying to figure out what's going to happen next. And all of a sudden, God says, "Go." And he's saying to this widow, and this widow is going to feed you. I'm sure he's probably thinking to himself, a widow, God, right? Okay, so a widow's going to feed me. That sounds nice. And I'm sure that he probably even got to the place, too, where he's contemplating. He's like, "God, you realize I'm a Jewish prophet, right? And you're sending me to a Gentile widow to provide for me. Like, God, you realize that this is what's going on, right?" And, you know, of course, God's going, "Yeah, I'm God, you're not," you know. "I know what's going on." But I'm sure Elijah's doing mental jumping jacks in his mind, trying to figure out what in the world's going to happen here. So he went to Zarephath. As he arrived at the gates of the village, he saw a widow gathering sticks. Now here's something interesting. Here's something really telling about this widow that we can find just in this small verse alone. The fact that this woman was out by the city gate and she's gathering sticks proves and shows that she doesn't have a servant to gather sticks for her. You have to realize, too, this morning, and again, as we connected these pieces, the unity of spirit, when we're in James chapter 5 this morning, we're reading about the prayer of Elijah to shut up the sky for 3.5 years. Well, guess what? This is the beginning of that prayer. When Elijah prayed and said, "Lord, shut up the sky for 3.5 years, and it did not rain for 3.5 years on the land. And then we also read in James chapter 5 that he said, just Elijah, just a man like you and I, all of a sudden he begins to pray and the water gets turned back on just that quick. And there's power in prayer. The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. Right? Do we believe that this morning, church? The power of a righteous person is powerful and effective. And I love the NLT. It says, "and produces great results." I love that. I love that. Produces great results. So Elijah's praying this prayer. They're beginning this 3.5 year famine that fell on the land. Now, here's the thing. Even during a famine, sticks would have been pretty obtainable. You know, people would have been able to gather sticks together. This woman, however, was so poor that she has to go and gather her own sticks. And she's going to going out into the city gate in order to even find them. So this is a very poor Gentile woman. And this very Jewish prophet says to her, "Would you please bring me a little water in a cup?" As she was going to get it, he called to her, "Bring me a bite of bread too." Can you imagine? I mean, seriously, place yourself in the widow's shoes. You know, I'm a visual learner, so I tend to, word pictures for me are really awesome. And like this to me, I can play this out in my head. I know what this looked like. This poor widow is out and she's scrounging at the city gate and she's looking for sticks, you know, and she's probably on her hands and knees and she's trying to figure out, where am I going to get these sticks from? And she's getting them, she's collecting them in their hands. She's like, "Oh, is this going to be enough to make my meal?" Right? And then all of a sudden, she has this Jewish prophet come walking into the city and he says to her, "Hey, can you get me some water?" So she's got these sticks. I can imagine her. She's walking away and she's like, "Yeah, water, water I can do. I can get that." And then all of a sudden he goes, "Oh, while you're at it, could you do me a favor and make me a bite of bread to eat?" Now, can you imagine this woman's response? Well, we'll see it in a second here, but she's holding on to this, to these sticks, and I can imagine maybe she was standing there and she just drops the sticks. And she turns around and she looks at Elijah and she says, "You have no idea. You have no idea. You have no idea, Elijah, what I've been through. You have no idea why I'm even gathering these sticks. You say you want a drink of water. Oh, that's fine. I'll get you a drink of water. I mean, I can get water. But now you want me to bake you a little bite to eat?" You know? And Elijah's probably thinking, God said that you'd provide for me. And I mean, he doesn't know. But look at her response. But she said, "I swear by the Lord your God that I don't have a single piece of bread in the house." Now Elijah's getting nervous. Now he's thinking to himself, "Wait a minute, God, you said that there would be a widow that was going to provide for me. This widow doesn't even have a bite of bread. She doesn't even have a bite of bread in her house. How in the world is a Gentile widow going to provide for me when she doesn't even have the resources to do it?" I'm sure that's what he's thinking. Isn't that what you're thinking? So we look at the story and she says, "I swear by the Lord your God." Now, this is interesting. This is interesting. Because she's a Gentile woman and she says, "I swear by the Lord your God." She doesn't know the God of Israel. She doesn't know the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. She doesn't know she hears these stories of God's provision. She hears these things happening. And so she recognizes that Elijah comes with a different authority than maybe anybody else that has come to her before. And he says, "I swear by your God, that I don't have a piece of bread in the house. And I have only a handful of flour left in the jar and a little cooking oil in the bottom of a jug. I was just gathering a few sticks to cook this last meal, and then my son and I would die." Basically, she says, she lays it all out there for him. "Listen, you asked for a glass of water. Bro, I can get you a glass of water. But the bread, you pushed me too far." I mean, she is a poor widow who she doesn't have anything. And she's going and she's saying, "I've only got a little bit of flour, a little bit of oil. Listen, Elijah, I'm collecting these sticks because I'm going to go home. I'm going to prepare the last meal for our family. And then my son and I, we're going to die." But Elijah said to her, now folks, I'm going to drop some truth on you. All right? And it's not me dropping truth. This is God dropping truth on you. And I want you to hear these words, because these aren't words that are just spoken from a prophet to us, to a Gentile woman thousands of years ago. But these words are for us this morning. No matter what our situation, no matter what our circumstance, no matter what we're going through, no matter all the hard things that are happening, no matter the things that surround us, listen to what Elijah says to her first before he says anything else. He says to her, and I believe that God says it to us this morning, listen, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Listen. Don't be afraid. And then he continues. He says, go ahead and do just what you said, but make a little bread for me first. Really? Here's the amazing thing. This is the test. This is the test for her. Because if we continue to look at the passage here, he says, then use what's left to prepare a meal for yourself and your son. For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. There will always be flour and olive oil left in your containers until the time when the Lord sends rain and the crops grow again. Here's the amazing thing about this story. This is the beginning of the 3.5-year famine. She has no idea how long this famine's going to last. She has no idea that they are at the start of this famine when she is about to die. But Elijah says, listen, go ahead and go do what you gotta do. I know you're getting sticks. You're gonna make a meal. You and your son are gonna die. I understand all that. If you really feel like that's what's gonna happen, go ahead and do that. Then he says, but do this for me first. Do this for me first. How amazing is it to think that this woman, who literally was just about to gather her last, to go back, recognizing she only has a little bit of flour, a little bit of oil, and that's it. And Elijah comes along and he says, do this for me first. And it's a test. The truth is, it's the same test that each of us face every time we get paid. Every time we get paid, anytime we have an increase, anytime God blesses us, we are issued a test. And the test is, who are you going to honor for your increase? Who are you going to honor? Who are you going to give glory to for that increase? Because there is no promise. There is no promise, but the Lord says, listen, I want to bless you. And I understand circumstances are really tight, and I understand that things are really rough, but listen, do this for me first. He asks each of us to honor him first. That's why we talked about it last week, about the first fruits, about the fact that we can't give our tithe. We bring our tithe because remember what we talked about. You can't give what's not yours. It's all his. He says, all of it's mine. All of it. All 100% of your increase is all mine. I provided the opportunity for you to receive it. But I ask for you, like it says in Malachi 3:10, to give me the first fruits of that, the first, the tenth, the tithe. Remember, it means tenth, a tenth part. And do that first. And he says, now you can use the other 90% however you see fit. It's the same story. Elijah's saying the same thing. He's saying, listen, God desires to honor you, but in order to get that, in order to receive that, in order to experience that, you need to do this for me first. It's amazing when we look at it. There's a misnomer of the power of this story. Many people believe that, or some people believe that Elijah was sent to the widow to provide for Elijah. But really the truth is, Elijah was sent to the widow so that God could provide for the widow. It was never about Elijah from the beginning. Elijah was just a medium. He was just a person that was going to deliver this incredible message of, if you honor me, I will honor you. Draw close to me, James 4, and I will draw close to you. Here, the powerful question I have for you this morning is, how do you anticipate that God's going to bless you or even bless your finances if you're not willing to do it his way? How do you expect God to bless you? And then, you know, take the finances out of the picture. To put anything you want in there. How do you expect for God to do the miracles in your life? How do you expect him to honor you? How do you expect him to bless you? How do you expect him to do anything if you're not willing to do it his way? Because he instructs us. He instructs us how to do it. As we continue to look, here's the amazing part of the story. So she did as Elijah said, and she and Elijah and her family continued to eat for many days. There was always enough flour and olive oil left in the containers, just as the Lord had promised through Elijah. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing. She had a test that was put before her. And she had no idea what the outcomes were, but she knew that God was saying, do this first. And so she did, and she was taken care of. It reminds me of Malachi chapter 3, because if we look at it, what does God say? Put me to the test. He says, test me on this, and see if I don't open the floodgates. Now again, we have to remember that the definition of blessing is different. It's not just monetary. It's not just monetary. It's not just financial gain. We've got to avoid prosperity gospel like the plague. Because it's not a get-rich scheme. It's not a it's not a health and wealth program. It's a biblical mandate that God places on our hearts to say, listen, when you have an increase, are you going to honor me first? And the truth is, just like the woman here, just like the widow, it's a test of faith and obedience every time. So now turn with me to Matthew chapter 25. And somebody for the Pew Bible reference, 756. Matthew 25. And while I'm going there, I want to ask three volunteers to come up. I think I've got time for this. So let's do this. JC, Caleb, and Tony, you guys come on up. Come on, I just want to stand here. One, two, three. You can argue who's over one, two, and three. Yeah, there you go. All right, one, two. All right, Tony. All right, so here we go. So we have these three gentlemen up here, and I want to help us to understand where we're going with Matthew 25. Okay, so here it is. I've got this trip that I'm going to be taking. Okay, and I'm going to be going away, and I'm going to be gone for a while. I can't tell you when I'm going to be back, but I have this beautiful wife. I don't know if you've met her, but she is amazing. And if, and I want you to take care of her while I'm gone. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to give each of you $10,000 a month. All right? $10,000 a month. Now this is what I want you to do. I want you to take $1,000 of that, right? And I want you to give it to my wife. Each month. And then you can keep the $9,000, you can do whatever you want with it. Okay? So now if I'm putting that plan together, this is what it looks like. I'm going away. My wife, she's gonna be here, and I need you to take care of her because I don't know when I'm coming back. I'm gonna give you $10,000 each a month, and then I want you to give her $1,000, right? And then you get to keep $9,000. Sounds like a pretty sweet deal, right? Right. Okay. So as we look at this story. Now I want you to imagine and understand that I've come back. So before I come back, though, I meet with my wife and I say, honey, you know that I'm going, but I set these guys up. They're going to take care of you. Now I wanted to make sure, have they taken care of you? Some of them have. What do you mean some of them have? So what about JC? He did? So he was giving you, I think if I remember, $1,000 a month, right? Right? So faithfully.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thanks, man. That's awesome. Good job. Now, Caleb, what about Caleb? He did as well. In fact, I think if you didn't you tell me that he actually was giving $2,000 a month?
Yes.
Good answer. Good answer. Because a no would have been really awkward. So you only had to give her $1,000, man, but you gave her $2,000 a month.
That's right.
That's amazing. Wow. Man, good for you. Now.
I gave her $3,000.
Sneaky. Tony. That's not how the parable goes. Well, let's see. So I think, didn't the first month he gave 300, the second month he gave 800, and then the third month, I don't think he gave anything at all, right? Isn't that right? Yeah. That's my wife, bro. I gave you $10,000 a month, and all I asked was for you to give me a tenth. And you could kept the 90%.
Do I have AP?
This is where truth meets Bible. Right? So the problem is, you know what? I want you to take the money that I was giving you, and I want you to give it to Caleb. And you know why? Because I can trust Caleb. You know, Caleb, right. Yeah, he's a good guy, isn't he? But because I know I can trust him because he didn't have to do more, but he did. So you know what? You're out, bro. I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm out. So, hey, let's give them all a hand. Thank you, guys. So as we look in the parable this morning, we see twice in verse 21 and verse 23 that there's words that are spoken to the two servants that did well, right? And look at what it says in verse 21 and 23. The master was full of praise. Well done, my good and faithful servant. Now, we've heard these words before, haven't we? These are the words that we desire to hear God proclaim to us as we meet with him on judgment day. As we stand before him, he says, well done, my good and faithful servant. Look at his response to this. You have been faithful in handling this small amount, so now I will give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together. I mean, we have this opportunity. He's given us whatever amount it is. Remember, at the beginning of the parable, he says that he gives us according to our responsibilities. According to our abilities is what it says. So no matter what amount it is, whether it's little or a lot, he asks us to be faithful. And who are we being faithful to? We're being faithful to God. You know, so this understanding, the reason I use this analogy, because it helps us to realize that you know, that Christ has gone away. And we don't know when he's coming back. It says nobody knows the hour, the day, or the time. But he asked us while he was gone to take care of his bride. And where do we see the analogy of the bride? Is his church. He's the head. He's the head of the church. And he says, I need you to take care of my bride while I'm away. Because guess what, folks? He is returning again. And we are going to be held accountable. And I know that's a hard, for some of us, it's a bitter pill to swallow, but it's reality, it's truth. I can't water it down. I can't make it softer. I can't make it nicer because it's reality. He's returning again and we are going to be held accountable. Let's go back to that, to the Elijah story in 1 Kings 17. Because I love this. I want this to be our final thought this morning. You know, this woman, man, she had no idea, but she knew that the only thing that she could do in this moment was trust. She just trusted in God. She just trusted and said, okay, you know, I don't have anything. I have very little. But Lord, what I do have, I give to you. And all of a sudden, we see this incredible action in verse 15. So she did as Elijah said, and she and Elijah and her family continued to eat for many days. There was always enough. Folks, listen to these words. There was always enough. It doesn't say that there was always too much. It doesn't say that there was always an abundance. It doesn't say that there was always so much that we didn't know what to do with it. But instead it says there was always enough. The question is God enough for you? Is God enough for you? for you. There was always enough. There was always enough flour and oil left in the containers, just as the Lord had promised through Elijah. Malachi 3, 8 through 10. It's a promise. He says, if you're faithful to me, I will be faithful to you. If you are faithful to me with a little, I will be faithful to you in a lot. If you are faithful to me, if you draw close to me, I will draw close to you. And it's trust. How much do we trust? The Gentile widow, trusted God beyond all doubt. So as we stand and close this morning, let's proclaim a song of trust this morning. Can we do that? Can we do that? Let's just trust in Him. Let's just trust and say, God, whatever it is, I will trust in you.